So yesterday we completed the description of the vision, which is ultimately obtained by one who follows the Ishavasya principle, and gradually evolves his perception of the absolute truth. From the beginning of seeing the Lord somewhere in the temple, to gradually seeing his presence within the devotees, and then also within the non-devotees, and ultimately seeing his presence everywhere, and then in the end having the darshan of the Lord in his transcendental form. Mantra 8 describes the transcendental form of the Lord in very Upanishadic words, such as Shukram, which means omnipotent. So we explained all these words yesterday. Akayam, having no body, which means nobody like ours. His body, his mind, himself are one. Asnaviram, no veins in his body, because it's not a machine. It's not a covering like our body. And what else did we hear about the Lord yesterday? Avranam, which means without reproach. We can't accuse him of anything. Like, why did you let this happen in my life? No. No faults. Whatever he does, we have to take the best out of it. It's for our benefit and there is no mistake. What else? Apapaviddham. Shuddham, apapaviddham. This denoted the purity, the 100% purity of the Lord. He is so pure, he is pure, not only is pure, what does he do? He purifies others. And what else? And he gives others his own power to purify. And he is immune, and he also gives immunity. This is the status of the pure devotee who is constantly in touch with the Lord. He is not touched by material nature. Just as the Lord is immune to material nature, the pure devotee is also immune. And the pure devotee can purify others. And the last line, yatha tatyatorthan vyadadhas chasvati bhya samabhyaha. You remember that line? Everyone remembers but cannot repeat it. It's a crooked line. Crooked like Krishna's form. And what does it mean? He fulfills everyone's desires. Okay. Since when? Time immemorial. It means we may have forgotten what we desired 100 lives ago, but Krishna has not forgotten. And he will bring it to us, because one day we desired. And we heard that the Lord fulfills the desires not just whimsically, according to the surrender of his devotees. He fulfills their desires, their spiritual desires, according to their surrender. And as far as the fulfillment of material desires for those who are not fully devotees, he looks at their qualification, which is whatever the karma they have done, karma, vikarma. So according to that, we deserve a certain thing. But then he also sanctions. Things do not happen just automatically. And the more we become devoted, the less things happen automatically. So this was our yesterday's. I thought that I would read something from the Srimad Bhagavatam, because now the last five verses, and especially in mantras 4, 5 and 8, we heard about the Supreme Lord, you know. But these descriptions we are not used to. And we really have to analyze the verses in a certain way to actually understand that this is talking of our Lord. You know, never we hear about Krishna, he has no veins. You know, when the gopis describe Krishna, they don't explain like this, you know, that he has no veins, our Krishna has no veins. This is not the type of description. So you can understand, we said in the beginning that the Ishopanishads, Prabhupada said, they mark the beginning of transcendental knowledge. They are books which are meant for people who are just now arriving to the level of knowledge and who begin hearing about the Absolute Truth. But in the Puranas, we hear much more evolved knowledge about the Lord. Knowledge revealed by the devotees who have actually seen Him. Knowledge revealed by the great demigods like Lord Brahma in the beginning of creation, who actually saw the Lord. We hear of the Lord when He descends on the in the material world, the people see Him and they write down His descriptions. The great sages see Him within their hearts and they write down the descriptions. So you can understand the difference between the Ishopanishad's level of revelation and the Purana's level of revelation. I will read something which is actually a description given by Narada Muni to Dhruva Maharaj in the fourth canto. So this is how he describes the Lord. He says, Prasada bhimukham shasvat prasanna vadane kshanam sunasam subhruvam charu kapolam surasundaram tarunam ramaniyangam arunoshte kshanadharam pranatasrayanam rimnam sharanyam karanarlabham. The Lord's face is perpetually very beautiful and pleasing in attitude. To the devotees who see Him, He appears never to be displeased, and He is always prepared to award benedictions to them. His eyes, His nicely decorated eyebrows, His raised nose, and His broad forehead are all very beautiful. He is more beautiful than all the demigods. The Lord's form is always youthful. Every limb and every part of His body is properly formed, free from defect. His eyes and lips are pinkish like the rising sun. He is always prepared to give shelter to the surrendered soul. And anyone so fortunate as to look upon Him feels all satisfaction. The Lord is always worthy to be the master of the surrendered soul, for He is the ocean of mercy. So this is what we hear in the Puranas. We get so much more insight. Not only that somehow He has a form and it's transcendental and it's non-different from Himself. And no, we hear more details. We hear the details of His form. We hear about His mind. We hear about His qualities, His attitudes, how He behaves with His devotees. Therefore, the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord, although they may read the Upanishads, they do not actually spend much of their time studying the Upanishads. Rather, the king of all the books in the Vedic literature, they consider that to be Srimad Bhagavatam. Because by reading Srimad Bhagavatam, we will find so much remembrance of Krishna. And by hearing those descriptions, we will actually develop attraction for Him and will desire to serve Him. So now we will move to the next section. Mantras 9 to 14. So let us read that. Andham tama pravishanti ye vidyam upasate tato bhoya ivate tamo yau vidyayam rataha anya devahur vidyaya anya dahur vidyaya iti shushramadhiranam yena stad vichachakshire vidyam cha vidyam chayas tadvedo bhayam saha avidyayam rityam tirtva vidyayam ritam ashnute andham tama pravishanti ye sambhutim upasate tato bhoya ivate tamo yau sambhutyam rataha anya devahu sambhavad anya dahura sambhavad iti shoshramadhiranam yena stad vichachakshire sambhutim cha vinasham cha yastad vedo bhayam saha vinashena mrityum tirtva sambhutya mritam ashnute. Did anybody notice anything in the construction of these verses? Who's that? Which two of them? 10 and 13. Okay? What about 9 and 12? As we said, there are two subsections in this part. So the first three verses and the second three verses, they have the same construction. Only some words change. The first three verses deal with vidya and avidya. And the second set of three verses, they deal with the sambhuti or sambhava and the asambhuti or asambhava. So we will discover what these words mean during our study of Srila Prabhupada's purports. We begin with mantra 9. Andham tama pravishanti ye vidyam upasate tato bhuya ivate tamo yau vidyayam rataha. Those who engage in the culture of nascent activities shall enter into the darkest region of ignorance. Worse still are those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge. So, this is actually an expansion of verse number, which verse we read before, that could have something to do with this, number 3. What was number 3? Those who do not follow Ishavasya principle, Asuriya Namate Loka Andhena Tamasa Vritaha. Tamste Pritya Bigachanti Yeke Chatma Hano Janaha. So we heard there that those who do not follow the Ishavasya principle, they are called what? Atmaha. And we heard in the verse it said ye ke means, we heard Prabhupada translated the killer of the soul, whoever he may be. And yeis is plural. It means that there are different kinds of killers of the soul. So in this section now, we are going to study the different types of killers of the soul. It's an expansion of this verse. The verses that we just studied in section 2, they elaborated on the result of following Kurvan Neveha Karmani Jiji Vishekchatam Samaha. They elaborated on what happens if we follow Ishavasya. And now this section will elaborate on what happens when we do not follow Ishavasya. And what are the different kinds? And we were told, Asuriya Namate Lota Andena Tamasavritaha, that the Atmaha enters in the darkest region of ignorance. Srila Prabhupada, in his lectures, he explains darkness in two ways. Darkness, in one way, means no light. So when we talk of no light, it means that the Atmaha enters in the lower planets where the light of the sun does not reach. And tama also means ignorance, which means that the Atmaha enters the lower species of life in which consciousness exists, but in a very, very reduced form. So there is so much ignorance in the lower forms of life. So now we are going to hear who they are, these different Atmahas. We'll hear that in Mantra 9, and we will hear that in Mantra 12. Different types of people. So, how does one enter into the darkest regions of ignorance? This is the process is indicated here. Two types of people are described here. Two ways by which we can go down. And when we talk of go down, it means to lower the consciousness. And this is the worst thing that can happen to us, is that the consciousness is taken away from us. We know that as devotees, when we are used to having a good sadhana, we live in a certain type of atmosphere within ourselves. And as soon as somehow we cannot have a proper sadhana due to sickness or something else, then we realize immediately there is a curtain that comes over our consciousness. And again we become merged into all kinds of thoughts and impressions in the minds and dreams and nasty desires come. And so we have lost our consciousness. We have lost the brightness. So this is the worst thing that can happen to us. Srila Prabhupada writes, this mantra offers a comparative study of vidya and avidya. And this mantra says, what does it say? That one who worships avidya, what happens to him? He goes down, he falls. One who follows the path of ignorance, who worships or cultivates ignorance, he falls down. And then the other line says that, and one who cultivates vidya, which is usually translated as knowledge. Vidya is knowledge. The actual meaning of vidya is knowledge. But one who cultivates knowledge, what happens to him? Oh, he goes down. And where? How much down? Even further than the one who cultivates ignorance. So this is the mysterious language of the Vedas. One who cultivates ignorance goes down. And one who cultivates knowledge, he goes even further down. So, here we are. Thinkers, what does that mean? One who cultivates ignorance, he falls. And one who cultivates knowledge, he also falls. Therefore, we must understand what is, okay, ignorance makes us fall, we can understand, but what is that kind of knowledge which makes us fall also, and even further down than ignorance itself? Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, who always gives us purported translations, he translates vidya not by knowledge, but by so-called knowledge. What is so-called knowledge? It's different kinds of knowledge, but basically it's a knowledge which does not take into account the Ishavasya principle. It's godless knowledge. So there are different types of godless knowledge, and we are going to study that. What are the different types of godless knowledge? Yeah, nishant activities. Yeah. So we are going to study that. If you can just wait a little second. Yeah, nishant activities, meaning the cultivation. How do you cultivate ignorance? There are different ways to do it. But usually we cultivate things. Culture means action. You will study that in the Nectar of Devotion, Anushilanam, Krishna Anushilanam. How do we develop love for Krishna? By serving him. We do something and love arises. So similarly, we do another thing and what arises? Ignorance. So what are these nishant activities? This is what Prabhupada further explains. And Srila Prabhupada's purports in the Ishopanishad, they are just a mastermind of how Srila Prabhupada is going to take this timeless knowledge compiled by the sages such a long time ago, which actually originated from Narayan at the beginning of the universe. And he takes that. What's going on? He takes that and he is going to put it right in the context of today. This is Prabhupada's brilliance. And that's why he is the acharya for the modern age. Because many other acharyas, you know, they are still living somewhere in their mats. They cannot go into the world. They have their knowledge, but they cannot apply it. They cannot apply it to day-to-day life. They cannot see what's here and what's outside in the world and how it connects. But Srila Prabhupada, having the full mercy of the Guru Parampara and the full realization of the principles, remember that, the principles that are presented in the Shastra, he can apply all this and see through the eyes of Ishopanishad what is actually happening in this world. It is quite brilliant. This particular purpose is quite brilliant. Prabhupada says this mantra of Sri Ishopanishad is more applicable today than at any time in the past. The first time you read this mantra, you wouldn't think like that. You would say, what this has to do with me? The Prabhupada says, no. He says, modern civilization has advanced considerably in the field of mass education, but the result is that people are more unhappy than ever before. So, and the point is that we have neglected God in the process. So now, and Prabhupada explains, so what are these people, what are the different types of people described in this mantra? Who are these people who cultivate ignorance or who engage in nishant activities? Hello. The karmis, yes, Prabhupada calls them. He refers to the Bhagavad Gita. And in the Bhagavad Gita, first let's make it clear. Those who cultivate ignorance, Prabhupada explains, are those who are engaged in gross sense gratification. This is what he calls by nishant activities. Those who are engaged in grossly satisfying their senses, who don't know anything else but eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And that's it. There's nothing else. And it's all on the gross platform. So, Prabhupada says, in this age, 99.9% of the population is just like that. Right or wrong?
Right.
Prabhupada's got the numbers right, you know. And then he explains, under the flags of industrialism, economic development, altruism, political activism, and so on. What is all this? Avidya. What is the aim of all these activities? Simply sense gratification. Selfish, gross enjoyment, without further thinking. Where is this going to lead me? No, they never think. They don't think. The scientists are always very eager to apply everything they find immediately. And you always have a counterparty which says, wait a minute, what will be the consequences of this new discovery? And then it's a matter of money always. And who has the more money just wins over. And who cares about the future? So these are called, in the words of Bhagavad Gita, the mudhas. We know very well that verse. What is that verse, 7:15? Four kinds of people. Namam duskritino mudha papadyante naradama. And then mayaya paritagnana asuram bhavam ashritaha. There are four kinds of people who never come to Krishna. They cannot, because they are completely covered by andham, tamaha, by this ignorance. So Srila Prabhupada compares them to his one of his favorite animals, the ass. What do they say? The ass, Prabhupada says, is a symbol of stupidity. We know the ass. What does he do to be stupid, the ass? Why is he called stupid? He carries a load which doesn't belong to him, yes. And just that for a little grass. Whereas, truly speaking, there are so many other animals like the deer and, you know, other animals, even the cow, who know that you don't have to carry a load in order to eat grass. Grass is everywhere available. You don't have to work hard to get it. But the ass doesn't understand that. The ass thinks that unless he carries the big load on his back and breaks his back, in India you see sometimes they put so much on the ass that suddenly his two legs, the right legs and the left leg, they go like prrrt, and he falls flat on his belly. It's so unfortunate. Yeah, very unfortunate. And then Prabhupada explains something else about the ass, that usually the ass is very stubborn. And when he decides not to go further, you can beat him to death. He won't move. He's used to be beaten anyway. So a little bit more or less. When he doesn't want to go further, he just doesn't move. So what does the ass keeper do? sometimes he ties on the back of the ass a stick that ends in front of the ass, and he hangs a carrot because the ass likes carrots. So he hangs a carrot and the ass sees the carrot and he thinks, wow, I want it, I'm going to get it. So he starts moving forward to get the carrot. But as he moves forward, because the carrot is tied to his back, the carrot moves still forward. Nevertheless, he doesn't really think. He keeps going and he thinks, I'm going to get it. So this is the sense gratifiers. They are after enjoyment and they think they're going to get it by going to the next object and then the next object and then the next object. But happiness remains a mirage. So they live in a world of complete dissatisfaction. So these people are called the mudhas, sense gratifiers. If we take it in the words of Ishopanishad from the Vedic literature point of view, the mudhas here are the karmis, those who engage simply in sense gratification. They can be actually either vikarmis, people who don't really follow the Vedas and just enjoy whimsically, or they can be the karmis who enjoy according to the Vedas but uselessly, because the goal of life is not to enjoy, right? So these two types of people. And nowadays in the world, except for India, where people have a little knowledge of karmakanda and how to enjoy according to the scripture, in the modern world people don't know anything about these things and they just enjoy whimsically. They are simply sinners. So, of course, in Bhagavad Gita, those who do not follow the principles of Varnashram, they are called the Naradama, the lowest of mankind. Those who do not follow Varnashram at all. So whether one enjoys according to the regulations of the Karmakanda section or whether one enjoys whimsically, the result is the same. One is an ass. So this is the first type, those who cultivate ignorance. Now, what are the other ones who cultivate so-called knowledge? So here Srila Prabhupada is going to give us different types of them. The most important type, and the type which is actually meant here by the Vedic description of the Upanishad, is the Veda Vada Rata. Here it says, Vidya Rata, Vidyayam Rataha. So Vidya is knowledge, and Rata means to be engaged. Those who are engaged in knowledge, and in this case it means those who are engaged in the study of the Vedic literature, but particularly the Karmakandi sections of the Vedas, those who study the Vedas. They study the Karmakandi sections and they become teachers of those sections. They, because they have the knowledge of how to actually go about sense gratification and how to avoid the results of sinful activity through prayaschitta. In India we know what is prayaschitta. It means, you know, when you want to enjoy and it's forbidden. So what do? You plan the sin and then you go to the priest, to the purohit, and you ask him, what kind of little yagya can I do to counteract this sinful activity so that I don't suffer in return? So this is the Vidya Rataha or Veda Vada Rataha. People who study the Vedas, but they study only the Karmakandi sections, which explain how to enjoy and how to avoid sinful reactions. And so why do they go further down than the simple fool? The Muda is a simple fool, a simple enjoyer. But these ones will go even further down. Why? Because they are in knowledge. Actually, they are not fully in knowledge. Yeah? What do they do with their knowledge? they mislead others. Yes. They mislead others. So therefore, not only see the simple fool, you know, he takes himself to hell and maybe one or two family members. But the one who studies the Vedas and who does not know the purpose, the end of the Vedas, in the Bhagavad Gita, you will hear of Pushpitam Vakyam, that in the Vedas there is flowery language, promises of enjoyment in the heavenly planets, promises of enjoyment if you do this yagya, this karma, that karma. So those who advise people according to this kind of knowledge, they actually mislead people from the path of God realization, which is the aim of the Vedas. And not only they go down because of their own bad karmas, but they take the karma because they take the position of guru. There are karmakandi gurus. And they accumulate all the karma of their followers. They send them to hell, and for sending them to hell, they go to a hell which is even worse. So this is the first type of people who are knowledgeable in the Vedas, but not in the purpose of the Vedas. Simply in the mechanics of karma. Yes? Sorry? I said the first type of killer of the soul is the simple fool called mudha. He is a sense gratifier, either through vikarma, like in the modern setting, or through karma, like in the Vedic setting. And the second type, second variety of killer of the soul is the one who cultivates so-called knowledge. The first type of so-called knowledge is this of the Vidyarataha or Vedavadarata, people who know the Vedas but does not know their purpose, who simply study the karma sections and advise people in sense gratification. So these people go down. They defy God. Right. You are right. She says that simple people, simple fools, you know, if they meet somebody who gives them proper knowledge, they may surrender. But those who already have some kind of knowledge or the other, then they are so full of themselves, they are proud of their knowledge, and they already have knowledge, what they believe is knowledge, so usually they cannot even accept a good advice. So, Srila Prabhupada gives us some other types of people who have misdirected knowledge. He says, according to Bhagavad Gita, the Mayaya Pahrita Jnana. And actually this will be seen again in Mantra 12. What is the Mayaya Pahrita Jnana?
The scientist?
No. The impersonalist, yes. One whose knowledge has been stolen by illusion. And usually it defines the impersonalist. Those who actually try to develop knowledge, they also study the Vedas, they study the Upanishads or whatever. They are the Jnanis. So the Karmis are condemned as mudhas. The Vedavadaratas are condemned. And the Jnanis who do not come in Guru Parampara, they are also condemned. For? Vidya. Yeah, those who cultivate so-called knowledge, false knowledge.
Is this even more dangerous than
Well, more than just its kind, they are all in the same bag, you know, they fall. They will be more condemned, in fact, than even these people in Mantra 12. Because Prabhupada explains that their impersonalism encourages atheism, which is worse than impersonalism. So we'll study that in Mantra 12. So the people who simply know about the karma knowledge of the Vedas, and then those who believe in the impersonal aspect of God and who get that knowledge somehow from the Vedas, they also go down because they mislead people from devotion. And then there is also the mundane scientist. This is an additional thing which did not exist in the past. People who don't follow at all the Vedas, completely outside. And they also have a lot of knowledge which has very less to do with either karma or jnana. It's just knowledge of technology. And these people, they are also listed here as those who cultivate false knowledge. So all these people are listed here and they go down. Srila Prabhupada gives two different, to show us, because all these people, what they do actually is that they encourage materialistic society. They encourage sense gratification. One is very easy to understand. The Veda Vadarata, they promise people enjoyment, so people become encouraged to gratify their senses more and to do ignorant activities, stupid yagyas for material profit. The impersonalist, how do they encourage sense gratification? Teaching you are God, yes, that's one way. You are God. Prabhupada said they are self-made gods. They are self-made gods. They don't care about anything. They are simply happy to be God. So in the position of God, when they actually attain the position of God, then they can have Leela. They have Leela. Many times you see some impersonalistic bogey yogis, you know. They are supposed to follow all kinds of regulations for purity, but from time to time, you see that they are actually found to have an affair with somebody or do this or that. Then the followers try to explain what's going on. And what's going on usually is explained as Leela. This is Leela. Because he's God, so he has a Leela. So this is the fall, you know, that attend. And because these people do not give any practical ways of actually controlling the senses to their followers, and in general they are just after name and fame, they are not after the welfare of their followers. So therefore they encourage dissatisfaction and sense gratification. And as far as the mundane scientists, their whole life is about increasing sense gratification. They support the consumer society. And I think we will read that in the next verse. We will see so many details Prabhupada has given about that. Okay, Srila Prabhupada gives very heavy examples here from Shastra. Regarding, he says that usually ignorance is considered like sleep. It's considered as a snake, right? Cobra. Ignorance, or an ignorant person, is considered like a snake because he's ignorant. So you never know. You can't trust someone who is ignorant. You never know what he's going to do, right? So an ignorant person is a cobra. And then a knowledgeable person who has so-called knowledge, whether it's impersonal or it's karma knowledge or scientific knowledge, is compared to what? a cobra with a jewel on the head, a mani, a jewel on the head. So his so-called knowledge shines like a jewel. So that kind of cobra is much more dangerous than the regular cobra. Why? He attracts, yeah. You know, I told you not to walk on the grass. So sometimes if you walk somewhere and you see a cobra, what's your reaction? You'll run away. You'll be scared and you run away. But suppose he's got a jewel on his head. Then you'll get bewildered. Right? Yadav? I think so. Instead of running away, you'll go like, what's that? And in hope of inspecting the jewel, you'll come a little further, a little closer. And as you come closer, what will happen? You'll be bitten. So in this way, Prabhupada says, the advancement of learning by a godless people is as dangerous as a valuable jewel on the hood of a cobra. A cobra decorated with a valuable jewel is more dangerous than one not decorated. So we see nowadays how all the people from the villages, they run to the cities, attracted by the jewel of modern knowledge, modern technology, and modern amenities. And as soon as they arrive in the cities, they get a hellish life. Then, Prabhupada gives another example. What is the other example? What is advancement of material knowledge? Decoration on a dead body. Oh, now we are getting sinister. Decoration on a dead body. Why do we decorate a dead body? To give pleasure to the relatives. Yeah.
18,000
pages written
decorating the dead body.
To decorate the dead body.
To show his status.
To show the status of the person. Okay?
To make the dead body look less dead and more attractive.
To make the dead body look what?
Less dead and more attractive.
Less dead, yeah, less dead. Less dead. It's a good word. More alive. What are they trying to do in one sense? Yes, they are trying to, first of all, they identify the body with the person, as they said, to show the status of the person. Person is gone. What is the status? But to make him look less dead, this is the fact actually, that they are trying to mask the reality. They want to forget somehow that the person is dead, you know. So they dress the person in nice fresh garments and they put the makeup and all. Just 2 days ago, very unfortunate, I had to go to Keshighat to take some lady who had very unfortunately left her body at the age of 38. And so because I was just going to lecture on that, when I was sitting in the car with the dead body, I was looking and I was thinking, yeah, it's right here. You know, the she was dressed in the fresh dress and you could see that everything had been put very nicely and she had some garland and thing was all decorated and all. To try to alleviate the pain of suffering, you know, of the relatives, and to try to forget the reality. So this is what the modern civilization is about. What is all this technology meant for? To do what? To hide the reality. When you go to great, great big cities like Los Angeles or big, big cities of the Western world that are super organized, you know, they have these, you don't even have, and now in India it has not yet come, these kind of things, but in the West there are like super highways where people go very fast, right, super fast, sometimes 5 lanes, 6 lanes. How many?
Eight lanes.
See, I'm behind. 8 lanes, you know? And they drive all in the same direction, not like in India that everybody chooses their direction. And, you know. They all go in one direction. Which direction? Hell. Okay. They go to hell A. All right. Now... So they just go down, down, they go, they go, they go, and guess what, once in a while, what happens? Guess what happens once in a while?
They change.
There is a, yeah, at the speed at which they go, if somebody does some little funny thing, or one car suddenly breaks down in the middle, then the next thing is bang, 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 100 cars, brrr, a mountain. And they all crash, and there's a huge mega accident. Now, everywhere on the big cities, on the, all these highways and all, there are towers to control the traffic, there are cameras, there are signals everywhere, it's surveyed by satellites. So immediately the news goes to the police that kilometer number 3.555, there's a crash. And immediately the nearest ambulance, the nearest hospital, the nearest everything, the police, everybody, within 5 minutes, 10 minutes, there is a whole crew right there on the spot. The police is stopping the traffic, and you can see the ambulance is coming, the guys are coming, they cut the cars, they extract the bodies, those who are dead go in the, you know, the car for the dead. They go to the morgue, you know. Those who are can be saved, they go in the ambulance to the hospital. Those who are need something very urgent are taken by helicopter. And then you got all the trucks that come and take all the cars, the broken cars, they take them away immediately. And then you got the firemen that extinguish the fire, and with their huge, huge pipes, they clean all the highway from all the blood and everything is cleaned away and everything. And then within a short while, the traffic starts again. And you have a beautiful lady policeman who's doing the traffic. And she's showing, please go. And so the people who've been waiting for half an hour who couldn't see anything, they ask, what's going on? And she says, nothing. Please carry on. So this is the modern civilization. This is technology. In India, if there is an accident, it's a ghastly scene. You arrive on the spot, you see the head on the left, the foot on the right, and, you know, oh my God, and it stays there for 3 hours before the police arrives, and there's blood everywhere, and everybody knows, yes. This is Marcha Loca. You know, they get a chance. They get a chance to remember death, but not in this godless civilization where everything is nicely hidden. Where are all the, like the people, you know, the people who have only, who are crippled and tortured, who don't have the correct body, do you see them in the street? Many times you don't. They have their own houses where they live. They have their own places where they live. Where are the old people? They have their own houses where they live. They have their own places where they live. It's almost the story of Gautama the Buddha, you know? When the Buddha was born, his father was told, That as soon as he sees the miseries of life, he will renounce everything. He will never become the next king. He will become a renunciate. So what did his father do? He locked him up within the palace. In the palace, he never kept any old servant. As soon as somebody got sick, he took them out. You know, nobody ever died there. You know, he took them out before they die. So he couldn't see anything of the miseries of life. So this is what we do in the Western society, and this is called decoration on a dead body. Yeah. So Prabhupada says, modern civilization is a patchwork of activities meant to cover the perpetual miseries of material existence. So you won't know. So Prabhupada explains all these things, and he tells us what is real knowledge. And real knowledge, we are going to study that in the next verse. Yeah, Prabhupada says that it's better, a civilization where people are less educated is better than this modern civilization that educates, that where there is mass education. Because the education is not spiritual. Prabhupada used to call the universities what?
Slaughterhouses.
Slaughterhouse. That's how he called the universities. Because there is systematic training in what? In avidya. Actually, both this so-called knowledge and sense gratification, both of them are avidya. In the Vedas, we hear that there are two kinds of education. Srila Prabhupada explains that in his lectures. There are two kinds of education, material and spiritual. In Sanskrit, it is called Brahma Vidya and Jada Vidya. So Brahma Vidya is the knowledge that studies what moves the objects. And Jada Vidya is that knowledge which studies the movements of the object. How fast the object is moving, where the object is coming from, how it is transforming. This is material science. So it is called Jada Vidya. Prabhupada explains that. Prabhupada said, Jada means, actually it means dull. Prabhupada says, which cannot move, that is matter. And spiritual education is about spirit, that which can move. Avidya means those who are captivated by the external movements. The actual mover is not being studied, but the external movement is being studied. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has sung very nicely, Jada Vidya Sabha Mayara Vaibhava. He says that this material knowledge, it's also an expansion of ignorance. It's not knowledge. It's an expansion of ignorance. Today we get great titles, you know, you study in the school and you get a degree in computer science. What is that science? Just how to press some buttons. And so, somehow or other, it is Mayara Vaibhava. Vidya means this material education. He says it is an expansion of Maya. The more we shall advance in this material education, the more we will be hampered to understand what is God. And at last we shall declare, God is dead. I am God. You are God. This is all nonsense. So Prabhupada says that we need education, but we should create that kind of department in the universities where the mover is studied, where the soul is studied. And we will find that modern education not modern education, modern education, modern science, what does it actually do? What does it do? In fact, multiplies the objects of sense gratification. Before, when we needed a soap, we would go to the shop and we would say, please give me soap. And the shopkeeper would give us soap. Now we go to the shop and we say, I want a soap. And what does the shopkeeper say? Which one? Do you want a natural soap? Or do you want a liquid soap? Or a solid soap, bar soap? You mean you want soap for the hair, for the face, for the skin, for the hands, for the feet? You want for children, for lady, for gents? You want for dry skin or oily skin? Right? You want moisture? You want gel? What is it that you want? Maybe some soap for the clothes or for the ground or maybe for the windows? What kind of soap you want? And the guy goes like, wait, I'll come back. I forgot. Or he says, give me everything. And instead of spending 5 rupees, he spends 500. So this is what it does. It increases, it multiplies the sense objects in a way which is unnecessary. And not only this, but it makes them more available. It brings them right. You know, you can order the soap through mail. It will come to you right at your door. You pay by credit card. You know. So it makes the sense object even more available. We don't need the sense object. We know as spiritualists that it's best not to get too close to the sense objects. Just keep whatever is required around. The more we see the sense object, the more we get the opportunity to contemplate them, the more we get the chance to fall into Maya. So they learn how to stimulate the senses. You know, okay, everybody has to eat. That's one thing. But what does advertising do? It just increase your desire to eat. And not only your desire to eat, but advertising means smell this, take this, touch this, eat this, hear this, smell this. You know, it's an appeal, a constant appeal to the senses. Prabhupada explains in his purports that this is the sensual platform. Beyond the senses is the mind. Beyond the mind is the intelligence. Beyond the intelligence is the soul. But that we have forgotten. Everything is on the sensory platform.
And the teacher coming, and what is the solution? We cannot deny to put our children to the schools also, like that's not the solution. And like the situation is really hopeless somehow, like I don't know also the education system, like children, and of course like we have in ISKCON we have the parents don't put their children to the schools, but I think that also we should think.
Well, Srila Prabhupada was very concerned about education because it's the heart of a civilization is education. So his guidance for us was that we really become communities. So we have to see that ISKCON just started like 40 years ago, you know? And we are still in the beginning of our movement. So hopefully we will survive. When the Hare Krishna movement will definitely survive and move forward. So what will happen as the number of devotees multiply and as the devotees mature more the knowledge which is given in these books, then we will be able to apply things in a more concrete way. And Srila Prabhupada's vision, the purposes of our society is ultimately to develop a community of devotees. and in which there will be, first of all, agriculture, self-sufficiency, so we can have pure products and worship the deity and take the prasad. And there will be schools for the children so that they can be educated, you know, and not be slaughtered in the modern schools. So this is Prabhupada's vision, you know. In the meantime, sorry?
So we kind of isolate ourselves from the...
Well, the thing is that that's what I mean by maturing, you know. That initially the gurukuls, you know, we may see them as a place where you just learn how to count on your fingers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, okay, and learn, you know, some very basic Achman and some Brahminical stuff and all. So that is there, but what we actually need to develop is the kind of schools where the children will know what is the material world and will also have spiritual values inculcated into them. The most important is the values, the spiritual values, and the taste for spiritual life. So these two things have to be given to the children. The taste for chanting, for hearing, for being with Krishna. Their spiritual education should be such a happy experience that they will want to be devotees. But we should not completely isolate them. I mean, at least I'm expressing an opinion, but Prabhupada wanted that. You know, what are we going to do with our children? They should preach. So if they have to preach, they also have to know what is the world, one way or the other. So we have to develop that education yet in ISKCON. It is developing. It is not fully developed. We have to continue working on that. If you are an educator, join, you know, the people who are working on that in ISKCON.
So thinking, like, should we also educate that, like, I think more that we should go to the educational centers, that actually we should become teachers?
That also. Prabhupada wanted both.
Yes.
Prabhupada, because you will read, we will see that in the next verse, that the main cause of ignorance is that the teachers themselves are adhira. So Prabhupada wanted that the devotees, one thing is we should have our own schools where children can be educated. And then the other thing is that the devotees should become teachers. Prabhupada wanted they should become teachers and they should become judges. You know, they should go in the field of law. They should become judges. He said, when the judges will wear tilak, then we will know that Krishna consciousness has won over the world. Right? So yes, we must infiltrate ourselves in the society and somehow deliver the goods.
The idea of devotees becoming teacher and going and teaching the normal school, like, they will not accept if you preach in a speech that will tell them your intellectual is not correct and art is
Yeah, it is not easy to be a teacher in outside schools, but the only thing that you can do by being teacher in those schools is to teach values by your own example. Because you see, the children, they learn by seeing. They learn by hearing, but mostly they learn by seeing. When we are small, we just see. Father is doing like this, I do like that. Mother is doing like that, I do like that. So when the children are hearing from the teacher, he is teaching maths, but what does he do? He smokes cigarette. So they are not just learning maths, they are learning to smoke cigarette. So that's where we can make a contribution. It's by giving them the right values. They will know, oh, my teacher is vegetarian. My teacher doesn't smoke. My teacher behaves like this, like that. That much we can...
Moral values.
And some moral values, spiritual values, as far as it is allowed. Because in secular states, it's not allowed to introduce any spiritual values, spiritual understanding. You know, Maya is, as a whole, this is Kali.
It's easy to teach them all the four principles because it's a moral value to become a human being.
But even this is not allowed in Western countries. In India, you can still kind of teach moral values. But in Western countries, for example, if you preach, if you could start teaching the children that they should not have sexual life, you know, that will not be allowed. You cannot teach that. Because the psychologist in the school is going to raise objections. You know, on the basis of psychology, they have opened up, you know, all this pandemonium in the Western world. Because the psychologist says, but then they will be repressed, they will be frustrated. So they have to be free. So it's difficult. It's difficult. Therefore, you know, we do have to develop our own schools. You know, like the Christians have their own schools. Anybody who is educated in a Christian school, he has certain, at least he knows there's God. You know, he knows there's God. Whereas the one who has been educated in a normal, regular public school, he has no clue. At least someone, you know, so we need to have our own schools. And there can be a whole variety of schools, like we have here in India, like we have the school here. So it teaches some spiritual things, but it works on a completely westernized curriculum. So it's mixed. In Bombay, there is also a school in Juhu that also runs a completely materialistic curriculum, but the children live on Hare Krishna land. They go to the temple, they have darshan, they take prasada. So when they grow older, these things remain. So these are mixed, it's mixed, it's material and spiritual at the same time. And then you go to Mayapur and you have Bhaktivedya Purna Swami school. That's a different thing. This is completely cut off from the world. You know, they wear wooden shoes and they only know Vedic mantras. They have no clue of what's going on in New York, you know. So, okay, how practical it is, we don't know. But these are different avenues being explored, you know. But we need to develop our own education. And more, even the materialists who are kind of a little bit in goodness, they don't want to send their kids to school. In America, where things are bad, but everywhere it's bad, you know, there is the highest rate of correspondence education for children.
And homeschooling.
Oh, that's what I mean. Homeschooling. Correspondence. Homeschooling. People don't want to send their children to school. And they are not spiritualists. They are just regular good people. Hello.
Yeah. In London also they got permission.
Yes, I heard that. Okay, so this is the modern society, multiplying the objects of sense gratification, making them available, advertising them, exciting the senses and the mind, encouraging mental speculation by publishing all kinds of nonsense, literature, poetry, all the film industry just meant to make people, you know, to activate the senses. You know? They're turning people into, you know, robots. And the thing is just excite them as much as possible so that they will eat as much as possible and do all kinds of sense gratification as much as possible. Why? So they will consume the products and then the industry will run. And the more we sell, the more we become rich. Who says that? The ones who pull the strings, you know. So the world is ruled by disciples of Kali. And of course, internet and all these things, very terrible. So it is a complete misuse of human intelligence. Yeah.
You know, for a person in the Board of Witness or even above the Board of Witness, it's very attractive.
Yeah.
They come to find that this person is a Hare Krishna.
Yes. Yes, so in this way, this is one of the ways that the Grihastha disciples preach. They live in the world, they work in the world, and the most important with them is their behavior. The bad things is when the Hare Krishna misbehaves. That's bad. That's bad. Then they say, you see, you see, you're not better than us. There is a Mayavadi, defeating Mayavad argument in the end of this purport to 9. It's about the Mayaya Paritagyana, the impersonalist. Prabhupada says, such men, unable to recognize their own foolishness, never consider how it is, because they say we are God. So they never consider how it is that God can be entrapped by Maya, his own illusory energy. If God were ever entrapped by Maya, Maya would be more powerful than God. Such men say that God is all powerful, but they do not consider that if he is all powerful, there is no possibility of his being overpowered by Maya. So Prabhupada is arguing like this. You know, they say, I am God, I am Brahman. The living entity and the totality of consciousness is one. But how did this all-powerful God become entrapped in Maya? That Prabhupada says, they cannot answer all these questions very clearly. They are simply satisfied to have become God themselves. Okay? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Anyad evahur vidyaya, anyad ahur avidyaya, iti shushrumad hiranam, yenastad vichachakshire. Okay, listen to this one. The mysterious language of the Upanishads continues. We heard in the first verse that by cultivating avidya and by cultivating vidya, we go to the same place. And we explain what kind of vidya was that. Now in this verse it says that a different destination is obtained by cultivating avidya and vidya. Mysterious, no? In the first verse, avidya and vidya lead to the same place. In the second verse, avidya and vidya lead to different places. Therefore, it is concluded by the acharyas that the meaning of vidya is different in the first verse and in the second verse. And how can we, it's not just their speculation. It's not a speculation. No. Because in verse 10, the kind of vidya which is referred to is qualified as iti shushruma dhiraram. What kind of vidya are we talking about here? It is the knowledge received through hearing, meaning shabda pramana, through guru parampara, from the dhira, the sober personalities. So the translation goes like this: the wise have explained that one result is derived from the culture of knowledge, and that a different result is obtained from the culture of nishans. In this verse, vidya refers to the culture of real knowledge received from the scriptures, from the spiritual masters, who are called here as dhira. Dhira means wise. What is the definition of dhira in Bhagavad Gita?
Sober.
Sober. What's the verse?
Dehi
nosminyata dehe kaumaram yovanam jara tatha dehantara praptir dhirastatra namuhyati. The one who is not bewildered is called the dhira. What does he know? That the body changes, but that the soul is eternal. So those people who have knowledge of the spirit, from them we should learn. And what we will learn from them will be real knowledge. Avidya here refers to the culture of so-called knowledge for sense gratification, or mundane knowledge, or in the words of Prabhupada also, impersonal knowledge. So this is all avidya. Avidya here includes the mudas, the mayaya paritagyanas, the vedavadaratas, all the ones we studied before in verse 9. Now they are all coming under avidya. And real knowledge, Srila Prabhupada will explain what it is in the purport. Real knowledge does not refer just to some kind of book knowledge. No. Real knowledge is actually the product of a cultivation, and it's the product of a process of knowledge. And Srila Prabhupada refers to the Bhagavad Gita in the 13th chapter, where Krishna defines knowledge. What is knowledge and what is the process of knowledge? And he defines that in 20 different items. And Srila Prabhupada has taken all these items here to define what is real knowledge. At the time of death, we will not just be able to, of course the Yamadutas are not going to come, but just by chance, if the Yamadutas come, we will not be able to just show them our Bhakti Shastra degree. Say, come on, I'm a Bhakti Shastri. What are you doing here? So it's not just a question of book knowledge. It's a cultivation of qualities and values and a specific state of consciousness. That is true knowledge. True knowledge involves knowledge, but also its application and the deep values that are grown from that knowledge. So let us see here, we'll go over these items. Number one is defined in Bhagavad Gita as amanitvam, or humility. This is the first item of knowledge. Humility. Not demanding respect. Behaving according to etiquette. So here Srila Prabhupada says, he summarizes that by saying, one should become a perfect gentleman. And of course, hopefully also a perfect gentle lady. And one should learn to give proper respect to others. So what is a gentleman? What is the essential characteristic of a gentleman, according to this? One who? He respects, yes. One who respects others. One who is not eager to always sit in the front line, present himself, impose himself. No, not that kind of person who always wants to dominate. No, that's not a gentleman. A gentleman, he may lead, that's one thing, but he respects others. He works for the good of others and respects others. And of course, I don't know whether it's there, should also not demand respect from others. Okay, second one, adambitvam. This is called in the Bhagavad Gita pridelessness. Not pretending to be what we are not. So these are, see how, what is knowledge? Knowledge, now we have a presentation of values, of deep qualities and attitudes. And actually what this process presents, the items from 1 to 6, especially 1 to 5, they present qualities. These are actually the qualities that one should develop in order to be able to approach the spiritual master and receive knowledge. Item 6 is taking shelter of the spiritual master. So items 1 to 5 give us the qualities which are required to get the knowledge from the guru. First, we should have some of these, at least the beginning of these qualities, and then it will be useful for us to approach the Guru. He will have mercy upon us. So Prabhupada says about this pridelessness, one should not pose himself as a religionist simply for name and fame. We do not go to the spiritual master just to increase our name and fame. We do not practice our sadhana for name and fame. We should have another purpose in mind, purity, and the attainment of true knowledge. And ultimately true knowledge means to know Krishna and our relationship with Him. Number 3 is ahimsa, non-violence. In the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says non-violence means not causing distress to others. And not only not causing distress to others, but actually giving them spiritual knowledge. If one does not preach, then he is not following this principle. The principle of ahimsa means you should share your knowledge. Whatever you have, you should share with others. It is a must. It is a principle of the path of knowledge. In Ishopanishad, Prabhupada said, one should not become a source of anxiety to others by the actions of the body, by the thoughts of the mind, or by the words. So this is great lessons for us. How many times do we become the source of anxiety for others? Either by our activities, our words, or our thoughts. So we have to work on these things. Number 4, tolerance, kranti. Tolerance means that we should bear insult and dishonor. Because tolerating, you know, basically it's the things that are difficult to tolerate, difficult that we should tolerate. Other things is not difficult. We accept them willingly. But when we get insulted, dishonored, oh, then that is the test. In Bhagavad Gita you will study when Arjuna asks, how can I recognize someone who is situated in knowledge? Krishna answers, just see how he reacts when people insult him. Just see his reaction when things don't go the way he was planning. Because otherwise, as long as everything goes well, everybody looks knowledgeable. But when things go against our desires, oh, then we show our true nature. Then you will know who is the man in knowledge. So in Ishopanishad, Prabhupada says, number 4, one should learn forbearance, even in the face of provocation from others. Number 5, Arjavam, simplicity. So Prabhupada has a special definition of simplicity. He says one should learn to avoid duplicity in his dealings with others. Simplicity. So simple means one. So Prabhupada said simplicity, it means to be straightforward. Being straightforward without diplomacy, that is simplicity. It's not just to wear simple clothes, eat simple food. That's also there. But simplicity refers to a quality of the mind, being straightforward. And it is the opposite of duplicity, because du means two. So one who is simple, he has one thing in the mind, and that's it. And he lives according to that. And one is duplicitous, he's got one thing behind the mind, one thing in the front of the mind. You know, you never know which one it is. So this is again, if we are duplicitous, we will not be able to acquire true knowledge. So two things. These are qualities that qualify us to actually acquire true knowledge. And these are also qualities that are displayed by a person who has true knowledge.
All the time being straightforward, so maybe sometimes hurts somebody because he says something bad qualities about being straightforwardly to them. So we should not just assume like every time we are telling everything straightforward to them.
Well, as it says, truth should be spoken palatably. So we learn there are techniques, you know, when we want to tell somebody something, like we learn that in Bhakti Shastri sometimes when we give feedback. We say, you did very well, and here is how you can improve. And in the end, you again say, but it was really good. So you make a sandwich. First you say some good thing, then you say a little thing, and then you again some good thing, so the guy is happy. Overall, it was good, but I have to improve. But if you tell him, come on, you know, everything's wrong. So we learn how to be straightforward. And the main thing about straightforwardness is that we should always work for the benefit of the other. We shouldn't just be straightforward because we saw a bad quality, so Prabhu, I'm helping you, you know, this is your lot. You know, look, I'm your well-wisher, you know, take it as you like. You're dumb, you know, and this is like the way you are, and I think you should change. What is the person going to do with that? He's going to leave Krishna consciousness. I came here to find love of God. I found hatred of mankind. So we should always think how to speak the truth, but for the benefit of the other, for the advancement, for the spiritual advancement. And sometimes it's not my job to tell that particular person. So we have to learn how to actually speak the truth in different ways. Sometimes we have to get the truth spoken through someone else, because from us the person will not take it. If the person is senior to us, we have to be careful what we say. It's bad etiquette. And if the person doesn't like us, then he will also not hear, you know? And if we know that this person only hears from that one, that's all, doesn't hear from anybody else, so what's the use of me telling him? So we have to learn. But that doesn't mean we should be duplicitous. Duplicitous means having a crooked intention, crooked mind. Okay? Number six, Acharya Upasanam, approaching a bona fide spiritual master endowed with these beautiful qualities, we can now search, Prabhupada says, one should search out a bona fide spiritual master who can lead him gradually to the stage of spiritual realization. And one must submit himself to such a spiritual master, render him service, and ask relevant questions. So you will study that in the Bhagavad Gita, as well as in the Nectar of Devotion in detail, how to approach the spiritual master. So item one, humility, and item six, and we will see later on, item 16. These are the three most prominent items of this list. Number seven, saucham, cleanliness. Following rules for external and internal purification. That is called cleanliness. Not only external cleaning, I've taken bath, I'm okay. No, did you chant your rounds? That cleans the mind, you know. So internally and externally we should be clean. Prabhupada says, in order to approach the platform of self-realization, one must follow the regulative principles enjoined in the revealed scriptures. Number eight, steryam. This is interesting. In the Bhagavad Gita, steryam is translated as steadiness. To be steady. Steer. Steryam. Steryam. And it's you can find that in the Bhagavad Gita, 13th chapter, verses 8 through 12, Prabhupada refers. So steadiness means to have a determination to make progress. One who is not determined cannot be steady. And interestingly enough, in the Nishopanishad, Prabhupada links steadiness to knowledge of Shastra. By studying, we become more steady in spiritual life. And hopefully you will experience that benefit from doing Bhakti Shastri. It will help you. Prabhupada says, number eight, one must be fixed in the tenets of the revealed scripture. So fixed, steady in different ways, and one is that we should be steady. That steadiness will come from the study of the scriptures, from the steady understanding of the principles presented and of the Siddhanta presented in the scriptures. Number nine, Atma Vinigraha. This is called in the Bhagavad Gita self-control. And self-control doesn't mean that you control your senses so that they don't do anything. This is the Mayavadis who do that. No eating, no sleeping, no doing this, no doing that, nothing. Control your senses, Prabhu. No this, no that, no this, no that, no this, no that. Prabhupada says, accepting that which is favorable. So Prabhupada explains, one should completely refrain from practices which are detrimental to the interest of self-realization. This is how Vaishnavas control their senses, accept what is favorable and reject what is unfavorable. We do not stop the senses, we direct them to favorable activities. You will study that in the Nectar of Devotion, verses 2 and 3. Number 10, Indriyarteshu Vairagyam. Renunciation of the objects of sense gratification. Srila Prabhupada explains, one should not accept more than he requires for the maintenance of the body. So we will study that further in verse 11 of Ishopanishad, that we cannot stop sense gratification altogether. Just to feed the body, as soon as we put something in the mouth, we will experience sense gratification. Right? As soon as we put the dal and sabji and the rice and the sweet, so what happens? There is an experience of sense enjoyment. Can we stop that? Should we stop that? No, we'll fall dead. You know? So the experience of sense gratification, we continue that. But only as much as is required. So this is the principle here. And the principles that we are going through now, all the way to number 15, this is what we learn from the spiritual master. The first five items were qualities required to get his shelter, and the items now from 7 to 15, this is what he will teach us. You can find it in Bhagavad Gita. Indriyarteshu vairagyam. It means you must renounce the objects. You must renounce taking pleasure in the senses. Meaning taking extra pleasure. Pleasure is there. Just by maintaining the body, you have to breathe. It feels good. You know? It feels good just to breathe. How can you avoid enjoying? We are enjoying machines. But we should not overdo it. We should not work for sense gratification. 11. Anahankara. Absence of false ego. And this, how can there be absence of false ego? The impersonalists deny all ego. Vaishnavas do not deny the ego. They say there is a false ego and there is a real ego, a true ego. The false ego is what? The bodily concept and the identification as the center and the enjoyer. That's the false ego. Aham bhogi. Aham bhogi. So this is the false ego. And aham dasa, dasi, this is the real ego. So we should understand our real identity, Srila Prabhupada explains. One should not falsely identify himself with the gross material body, nor should one consider those who are related to his body to be his own. Kyunki, because there is aham and mama, I and mine. These two things go together. This is the ahankar. So we should not have this kind of identification. Who is mine? Who is the property of the Vaishnava? Krishna. Not my wife, my husband, my kids, my this, my house, my country. That is ahankara. This is false mithya ahankara. And false proprietorship. But when we say, Krishna is mine, and whose am I? Krishna. You know, the t-shirt, I belong to Krishna. And we have a t-shirt that somebody has printed like this in the back. It says, I belong to Krishna. So this is the real identity. I am Krishna's servant, I belong to Krishna, and what is my property? Krishna. Krishna is my property. That's all. Nothing else. In other words, these are relationships on the spiritual platform between the soul and Krishna. Number 12. Oh, Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadi Dukkha Doshanu Darshanam. So this is, you can look up in the Bhagavad Gita. What is Janma? Birth. What is Mrityu? Death. What is Jara? Old age. And Vyadi? Disease. The perception of the evil of birth, death, old age and disease. Prabhupada writes, one should always remember that as long as he has a material body, he must face the miseries of repeated birth, old age, disease and death. There is no use in making plans to get rid of these miseries. The best course is to find out the means by which one may regain his spiritual identity. So all the endeavors of the devotees are meant to end the cycle of birth and death. 13, asakti, or detachment. One should not be attached to more than the necessities of life required for spiritual advancement. One should not accept more than he requires for the maintenance of the body. This was in terms of self-control. Number 10. What was number 10? Renunciation of the objects of sense gratification. This is... not going beyond the maintenance of the body. And number 13, the item is actually called asaktis, being attached, actually being attached. One thing is to actually accept more than is required, which is not recommended. But the other one is to be attached. And we will study this in Ishopanishad in the next set of three verses, is that sometimes people regulate sense gratification because they know it should be regulated. They know you should only eat that much and you should only eat this that much and that much. But even though they have regulated the activity so it looks like they are doing fine, but guess what? They are attached to the minimum regulation. So this is what it refers to be attached, you know. So, and so it's not that you are enjoying more than required, but you are attached to the minimum. You can't get rid of this sense gratification. You are attached to the minimum. So that has to be eliminated gradually. Obviously, what we are studying are gradually, you know, there's a certain advancement which takes place here. Yes?
I'm trying to understand. That is what regulation is about, right? You try yourself down to bare minimum, basic regulations.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fine, but the regulation is meant to cultivate detachment, but by accident. Progressive detachment, but by accident, instead of because if you don't keep the aim in mind and if you don't associate sufficiently with the spiritual activity, then this very material activity that you are practicing at a minimum because you are regulating down, you will become attached to it. Right? This will be, Srila Prabhupada calls that an accident on the royal road. When there is a royal road, you know, royal road nowadays, of course, all the roads are Shudra roads. But the royal road meant a wide, straight road leading, you know, from the palace to the capital. It's the royal road. It's very wide. There are beautiful trees on each side. You can't really have an accident on the royal road. There's only the king going there, no one else. You know, however, sometimes there's an accident on the royal road. So Prabhupada says that even though you are following all the rules of the Vedas, this particularly, involved the process of gradual, it's not the process of bhakti, the process of gradual advancement through the regulations of karma and karma yoga. So you are regulating, but suddenly you became attached to the minimum sense gratification and you forgot what was the aim, was to get rid of it altogether. You know, so there was an accident. Okay, the next one is anabhishvanga, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home and the rest. Freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home and the rest. So Prabhupada says in Ishopanishad, one should not be more attached to wife, children and home than the revealed scriptures ordain. So family life is highly regulated in the Shastras, because this is the ashram, the situation, first of all, where most of the people are, and it is this situation which is the most prone to difficulties, because all the objects of the senses are there. So now Srila Prabhupada in Bhagavad Gita explains, so this certainly doesn't mean that you should just get rid of the family altogether, you know, because you know that the family is really a source of terrible attachment. It's described all over the scriptures. The deepest attachment is the family relationships. And especially the most intimate relationships, husband, wife, and the children. This is very, 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 very... You can renounce your father, but not your wife. You can renounce your this and that, but not your kid, you know? So it's very, very deep attachment. So therefore, this attachment... And it doesn't mean that there shouldn't be any attachment at all. That also would be completely abnormal. You know, you leave, you have your three kids there, but you never kiss them, you never embrace them. You say, stay away, oh Maya. This, and unfortunately, some application by immature youngsters in bhakti, you know, and that somehow got married but don't want to take their kids on their lap because, you know, I'll get all emotional about it and then I'll be in Maya. You know, but if you have accepted that ashram, so Prabhupada teaches that the Grihastha should learn to make a difference between what is healthy, affectionate behavior and overdues of nonsense, illusory attachments. So we have to learn between the two, the difference. And there should be affectionate exchanges amongst the family members, but there shouldn't be like outpours of passion. So Prabhupada gives the recipe in the Bhagavad Gita, what should be done except of no, 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 don't be attached, don't do this, don't do that. Prabhupada says, chant together, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, prepare and take prasadam, worship the deity. So this is the instructions for healthy grihastha relationships. This is how you maintain a very conducive attachment with the family members. You sit together and instead of talking prajalpa, you chant. Then every day you hear the Bhagavatam together. You prepare the prasadam together. You take the prasadam together and you worship the deity together. And then you can live in the grihastha situation and it becomes an ashram. It's an ashram. A place where the guru is the center and where Krishna is the center. And when guru and Krishna remain the center, then this attachment will not grow. This illusory attachment will not grow. It will be a healthy attachment in which all the family members will see each other as spirit and not just the body. They will work for each other's spiritual welfare and not just material welfare. The mother will not just desire that the kid should eat. She will make sure that it takes prasad. Like that. So all the relationship will be dovetailed in Krishna consciousness. We can hear the bliss of grihastha life outside. When they do like that, detachment comes automatically. But actually it is said not for the parents, you know? When those who are not the parents of the child, when they hear this crying, they go like, ah! They cannot tolerate it. However, the parents, when they hear their child cry, it's different. they can tolerate the highest pitch, you know. They scream. If somebody is not the parents, they can't tolerate the screaming of the children. But the parents can. They have been given a special ability to suffer. Let's not laugh. So, Prabhupada gives very good instructions here to see the things in a positive way and to cultivate Krishna consciousness intelligently. 15. Even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events. One should not be happy, ha ha ha, I won the lottery, or distressed over desirables and undesirables, oh, I lost the lottery. Knowing that such feelings are just created by the mind. So this is usually what happens. We get something enjoyable, ha ha, and the thief comes and steals our mobile, ho ho. One time I was traveling on the train through Orissa and the southern part of Bihar and Bengal. So that's the most terrible place you can be on the train. And I was so tired. I was coming, I think from, I don't know, some Janmashtami or some programs in Maharashtra. Many days of preaching, so I was completely knocked out. They delivered me on the train. I went on the sleeper and fell asleep. So I slept and I put my suitcase under the thing. And I woke up the next morning in the middle of southern Bihar. And I just awoke. I said, wow, I didn't wake up the whole night. I was sleeping like a log. I looked under the sleeper to get my toothbrush. And I went like, oh, there was nothing. There was no suitcase. So I went like, oh! My mind started reeling, my Bhagavatam, my CD player, my clothes, my this, my that. And every 5 minutes as I was chanting my japa, I was remembering one more item that was... And it lasted for days, remembering, oh, yeah, it was in the suitcase, oh. So I was lamenting. I walked up and down the whole train to see whether they had put it somewhere. I couldn't find it. I was so distressed. The only good thing is I could go to the toilet any time without worries because I had no luggage. So when I arrived in Calcutta, all, you know, those guys who want to carry the luggage, they assault the train. All the coolies came on the train. And they were like, ma'am, coolie, coolie. And, you know, they are a torture because they always want so much money. And if you happen to have a white moon-like face, oh. So I was so happy when I arrived in Calcutta. I said, no. No luggage, ha ha. So I continued and all that. And then I arrived in Navadvip. I took the train. And again, I was very happy because I went by the local train and usually it's so crowded and, you know, everybody's cursing you because of your luggage because it takes two seats, you know. And this time everybody was happy with me. You know, I was sitting in my little corner. I was really happy. You know, when I had to change station, usually I had to carry my luggage. And I was like, wow, no luggage. I was so happy. Then when I arrived in Navadvip, I remembered I had no clothes for the next day. So then I became very unhappy. And I went to the shops and I spent so much money to buy clothes, brush, this, that, so many things, you know. So I was really dookie. And then I took the rickshaw and I arrived on the boat. And usually I remember dragging my heavy suitcase onto the boat in Mayapur. It was always a pain. And that day I was like, oh, suki, no luggage. It was really good, you know. And then I arrived in Mayapur and I realized my Veda-based disc was in the suitcase. Oh, dookie. So after this experience, I understood this thing. You know, we get things, we lose things, and both are either, you know, alternately source of happiness and distress. What can we do? One man won the lottery. He won $1 million. He was so happy, he had a heart attack, and he died right away. So even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events should be there. Number 16, most important, one should become an unalloyed devotee of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, and serve him with rapt attention. This is called avyabhicharini bhakti, constant and unalloyed devotion to Krishna. One should practice bhakti directly. All the other things are things you do, but are attitudes you develop, you cultivate, and so on. So this refers to navavida bhakti, according to the definition of anya bilashita shunyam, pure devotional service. So this, I said three items are more important. Which ones? 1, 6, and 16. Humility, accepting the spiritual master, and unalloyed devotion. If we have these three, we're fine. Now, 17, aspiring to live in a solitary place. These are actually two items in the Gita. And detachment from the general mass of people. One should develop a liking for residence in a secluded place with a calm and quiet atmosphere, favorable for spiritual culture. And one should avoid congested places where non-devotees congregate. So this actually does not necessarily point out at living alone or sitting alone, but rather at sadhu sangha. One should choose the right association and live in that association. And when it comes to sadhana, you know, if it's good to practice sadhana along with other devotees, but at times when one becomes very concentrated in chanting japa or in study, then one will actually appreciate a lonely place where one can concentrate. Then the last one, one should become a scientist or philosopher and conduct research into spiritual knowledge, recognizing that spiritual knowledge is permanent, whereas material knowledge ends with the death of the body. So in Bhagavad Gita, this is called accepting the importance of self-realization and undertaking philosophical search for the absolute truth. And then Prabhupada said, these 18 items combine to form a gradual process by which real knowledge can be developed. Except for these, all other methods are considered to be in the category of nishans. Etat jnanam iti proktam ajnanam yat ata anyatha. This is from the Bhagavad Gita. So this is the way, Srila Prabhupada explains in the Gita, that there is a long way. It begins from humility, and from humility all the way to developing love of Godhead is a long path which is learnt from the spiritual master, and this is actually what is called true knowledge. Such knowledge is learned from a dhira. A dhira is one who is not disturbed by material illusion. And Prabhupada in this purport explains how that we should make the best use of a bad bargain. What is the bad bargain? We've taken birth again, okay? We could have avoided it. We did not. So, we've taken birth again, that's the bad bargain. We've got a body. Of course, the good bargain is that it's a human body. But the fact that we have taken a body, a material body, that's a bad bargain. So, we have a material body, we have a material mind, and all these are foreign elements to us. So what we have to do is make the best use of what we have. We can't just throw it away. That's impersonalism. We take what we have, and with what we have, with our body, with our mind, with our intelligence, we cultivate true knowledge. You please study in this purport. Srila Prabhupada goes very systematically through almost each and every of these principles, and he shows how the material civilization of today practices the opposite. Did you see that? The Prabhupada does that in the purport. He shows that the signs that modern civilization is actually going against all these things. For example, I'll take you some examples. He says, in the modern society, even a boy thinks himself self-sufficient and pays no respect to elderly men, due to the wrong time of education being imparted in our universities. Boys all over the world are giving their elders headaches. Which principle does that defeat?
Humility.
Right. Defeats humility. So he is going to prove almost each and every one. Another one, he says, the drivers of our spaceships may be very proud of their achievements, but they do not consider the supreme driver of these greater, more gigantic spaceships called planets. Pridelessness. Yeah, they are so proud of their material advancement. Next, scientists are busy discovering lethal weapons to wipe out the existence of other countries. Each and every nation has become a source of anxiety for others. More than 50% of a nation's energy is devoted to defense measures and thus spoiled. Which principle does this destroy?
Non-violence.
Yes. Then he says, there is animosity not only in social and political fields, but in the field of religion as well. Forbearance, no tolerance, not even religious tolerance. Then he says, in the modern society, even a boy thinks himself self-sufficient. No. They are self-sufficient. In other words, what do they not need? They do not need a spiritual master. They are self-sufficient. They don't need a guru. University students today are not given instructions in the regulative principles of brahmacharya. What is that? No. Saucham. Cleanliness. Yes. They have no faith in the injunctions of the Shastras. Steriam, steadiness. Yes. Befooled men have created their own nations within these planets in order to grasp sense enjoyment more effectively for these few years. What is that? Self-control, or rather renunciation of the objects of sense gratification. Foolish people draw up various plans to render national demarcations perfectly, a task that is totally impossible. This actually defeats the absence of false ego. They have extended ego. They have nations and borders. So he goes on and on like this. Religious principles are taught for the sake of name and fame only and not for the sake of practical action. This defeats the principle of constant and unalloyed devotion to Krishna. No one cares for the cultivation of real knowledge. This defeats the last item, accepting the importance of self-realization. So see how Srila Prabhupada very systematically hits at that civilization? Bang, 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 bang. You please learn how to study Srila Prabhupada's purports. They are grand. You know? In this study of Prabhupada's books, we should learn to see Prabhupada. What a great, you know, he had such a vision. And he says things in such simple ways. And in fact, it is said that, what do they say in English? That which is understood well is expressed concisely or simply. They have a saying in English like that. That which is conceived well is expressed...
In a nutshell,
is expressed concisely or very simply. So Prabhupada's purports look very innocent. You know, but when we study them and go inside, then you understand all the ramifications. He had complete, perfect knowledge of all the interactions of matter. Okay. So this is very nice. I can see that you are full of enthusiasm. Yes or no?
Yeah,
sorry? More 5 minutes and then you explode? What is it?
After 5 minutes.
Oh, you want a break? Acha. Okay. So if we take a break, it's a 5 minutes break. And can we go up to 6? Did I hear yes?
Yes.
That was a very enthusiastic yes. Sorry?
After 5 minutes,
the yes. Okay, please go out and come back with enthusiasm. All right. We'll resume in 5 minutes and we'll try to go as much as we can in this mantra 11 here. Even more mysterious, mantra 11. Okay, so we'll continue here. Let us read these three verses that will refresh our mind. Andham tama pravishanti ye vidyam upasate tato bhoya ivate tamo yao vidyayam rata. Anya deva hur vidyaya, anya dahura vidyaya, iti shoshramadhiralam, yenas tad vicha chakshire, vidyam cha vidyam shayas, tad vedo bhayam saha, avidyaya mrityam tirtva, Vidyayamritamashnute. So now we are now reaching mantra 11. Again, quite mysterious. Vidyam cha avidyam chayas tat vedo ubhayam saha avidyayam rityum tirtva vidyayam ritamashnute. Only one who can learn the process of nishans and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. So what are we hearing here? First verse was by cultivating knowledge and by cultivating ignorance, adogati, same destination. In the second we heard, by cultivating knowledge and by cultivating ignorance, two different destinations. And now we hear that we should actually, if we want to reach destination, we should cultivate both. So let's try to understand this clearly. This mantra 11, we started to talk of the bad bargain, making the best use of a bad bargain. So this is what this mantra 11 explains. How to make the best use of a bad bargain. You've got the body, you can't get rid of it. So, but you must get rid of it. Right? You can't get rid of it now, but you should get rid of it ultimately. So how to achieve that? This mantra 11 points at a transcendental goal for those students of the Vedas who only knew before about either karma or jnana, cultivating sense gratification or cultivating knowledge. But they did not know the goal of life. So in this verse, the goal of life is indicated. What is the goal of life? What word here indicates the goal of life? Immortality. Amritatva. The state of deathlessness. This is the goal. So the goal of our cultivation of true knowledge should be to achieve freedom from the laws of nature and attainment of immortality. And this verse says that in order to achieve this immortality, both knowledge and ignorance are useful. So Prabhupada explains that, and we heard that already in previous mantras, that the living entities have a desire for eternal life, or rather, a desire to avoid death. No one, you remember what was written? No one wants to die. Everyone wants to drag on as long as possible, right? And the reason was that Satchidananda, right? So similarly, Prabhupada explains here that the desire of all living entities is some kind of permanent life. We don't like this change. We want some permanent life. Many devotees whose karma is always to move around and change situation, they go like, when is it going to stop? I want some permanent situation. I want to settle down. I want to go home. I want the place where I can stay, and it's the place where I always return every day. So we don't like the changes imposed on us by the laws of nature. But Prabhupada says the laws of nature are so cruel that no one has been able to avoid the ultimate change of death. No one wants to die, no one wants to become old or diseased, but no one can avoid those things. So, the Ishopanishad wants to teach us how to obtain this immortality. But first we should understand exactly what is immortality, and we should not make the same mistake as who? Hiranyakashipu ki! Jack. So we should not make the same mistake as him. Prabhupada describes him in very lovely words. This cunning gentleman. What means cunning? You know cunning? Sly. Crafty. You know? Very calculating and sneaky. So what he was calculating? how he can avoid death. That was easy. He was calculating with his brain and getting the assistance of the greatest person, paying a bribe to Lord Brahma to become immortal. He calculated, I shall not die within the day. I shall not die in the night. I shall not die inside. I shall not die outside. I shall not die by the hands of a human being. I shall not die by the hands of an animal. Like that. He was making a list. He had a long, long, long list. And in the end, Lord Brahma said what? Tatastu. Okay. You go, you take your blessings. And he became very, very confident that he could become immortal. But what did this mean? That he thought, who is me? It's the body. And therefore, who should avoid death? It's the body. The body should not die. That was Hiranyakashipu's idea. And indeed, it is the scientist's ideas today. What are they trying to preserve, the soul or the body? The body. They don't care about the soul. They're trying to preserve the body. The whole industry, medical industry, is just, that's why Prabhupada says, tiny Hiranyakashipus of today. That's how he calls us sense gratification, sense gratifiers, and the scientists, you know. So we should understand this lesson from Sri Upanishad, that the goal of immortality cannot be achieved in this world. It cannot be achieved in this body, and it cannot be achieved by material means. And no matter how great the material knowledge, but it cannot fulfill that desire for immortality. It cannot pierce through the laws of nature. Prabhupada explains that the laws of nature are insurmountable. And Krishna says that in Gita also. Mama Maya Duratyaya. Very, very difficult. Nobody can overcome the laws of material nature. And Prabhupada gives the example of Hiranyakashipu. He is the hero of the materialist. Prabhupada said he was interested in two things, money and women, which means money and sex life. This is what he liked. And Prabhupada said he was the most powerful materialist, but even he could not become deathless by his various plans. What then can be accomplished by the tiny Hiranyakashipus of today, whose plans are throttled from moment to moment? So we are very, very small in comparison to Hiranyakashipu. There is not one single man on the planet, you know, who has his power. He had conquered the heavenly planets. He had conquered the whole universe. You know what was his plan? Is by doing papa or sin, they will go to heaven. And by doing punya, they will go to hell. This was his idea. Because he was an asura. The asuras, they live in irreligiosity. So he was building a staircase to go to the heavens, and entrance was only for the sinners. In other words, he wanted to change the laws of nature. That's what he wanted to do. But Prabhupada and the Upanishad advise us that we should not try. This is not the way to become immortal. And Upanishad in this verse gives us the process for achieving immortality. Vidyam cha avidyam cha yaha tad veda ubhayam saha. One must cultivate both together, vidya and avidya. Again, very enigmatic. What does that mean? So, we hear, we will hear how Prabhupada explains that, and we hear that in the Bhagavatam also, where it is explained that we should cultivate transcendental knowledge both directly and indirectly. We hear that in the first verse in the of the Bhagavatam and in the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam, that this is what we have to do. Directly we should cultivate transcendental knowledge, and indirectly as well. And this is what the Upanishad refers to here. So what does it mean to cultivate transcendental knowledge directly? This is what Ishopanishad refers to as cultivating vidya. And Prabhupada explains here, vidya means real knowledge. The knowledge that was described in verse 10. The whole process of knowledge. So this is what we should do. We should cultivate these 18 items of knowledge. And basically Prabhupada explains the process by which one goes back to Godhead is a different branch of knowledge. And it has to be learned from revealed Vedic scriptures such as the Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, Bhagavad Gita, and Srimad Bhagavatam. So what is this cultivating real knowledge? It means the 18 items of knowledge, and it means to hear. Iti shushruma dhiranam. To hear from the dhiras, hear from the spiritual masters, hear from the revealed scriptures. Take advantage of the shabda praman. So this is what is meant. And it also means directly engage in devotional service. Navavida bhakti. Hear, chant, remember Krishna. So this is what is meant by cultivating vidya. Now, and this is direct cultivation of transcendental knowledge. Now we will hear of the indirect cultivation of transcendental knowledge, which is called in Ishopanishad cultivating avidya. Now here, what will avidya mean? This is very enigmatic, because so far, what did we hear about avidya? What is avidya? Ignorance. And what does it mean? To engage in what kind of things? In sense gratification. And the study of godless knowledge. This is avidya. This is what we heard so far of the definition of avidya. So does the word avidya here means this? That we should simply engage in sense gratification along with our japa mala. You know, ice cream in the left hand, Hare Krishna in the right hand. Let's go. We are ready. It cannot be that. It doesn't mean engaging in gross sense gratification or cultivating knowledge aimed at sense gratification, either gross or subtle, like impersonalism. Because Prabhupada, he makes it clear in this purport. He says, the path of avidya, or advancement of material knowledge for sense gratification, is the path of repeated birth and death. So this avidya doesn't refer to the gross sense gratification we heard. It doesn't mean to identify ourselves with the material body. It doesn't mean unrestricted sense enjoyment. It doesn't mean to remain ignorant and not learn anything. And actually, if we want to develop transcendental knowledge, we must stop that kind of avidya. And Prabhupada explains in his purport that in the case of our modern society, the culture of avidya and the neglect of spiritual cultivation have led to dangerous situations. And he talks of these atomic bombs and so on, by which we are nearing the destruction of the world. But of course, Srila Prabhupada did not believe, and we don't believe, in the destruction of the world by the hands of man. Who is the destructor of the world? Shiva? Krishna, yeah. Not man. So what does it mean to cultivate avidya here? Anybody understood what it means to cultivate avidya?
To be aware of what leads you to ignorance. So, it also says in the translation, one can learn the process of nations and that of transcendental knowledge. So, if you learn the process of transcendental knowledge, so what I understood is that if you learn what leads you to ignorance, you're not going to go there.
Okay, so one very good point, it means you should learn from the Shastra what is ignorance, and then you should stay away from it. Okay, that's a very good point. What else?
No more the trappings of sense gratification.
Yeah, learn about the trappings of sense gratification. It's a bit the same. Learn about the trappings of sense gratification, and therefore know how to stay out of there. Yes? What else? Yes, so we were speaking of that. What are some other things Prabhupada says about cultivating avidya? To understand our position. This is another point. We should learn our lessons from the laws of nature. What lessons do we learn from the laws of nature? Prabhupada says something quite heavy here. He says, the miseries of this material world serve to indirectly remind us of our incompatibility with dead matter. This is page 78, if we have the same book. The paragraph begins, from his kingdom, the personality of Godhead. Yeah? So the miseries, so we should learn. Cultivating avidya means to learn about the miseries of material life. See the defects of the material world and use that as an impetus to engage in the culture of vidya. Prabhupada says, the miseries of this material world serve to indirectly remind us of our incompatibility with dead matter. Intelligent living entities generally take note of these reminders. You know the backache? It's a reminder. It's a reminder of the nature of the world. And when I'm taking note, you know, because you will read that in the Nectar of Devotion, that the first qualification absolutely required to take full shelter of the spiritual master is to have understood the nature of the material world. As long as we have hope and we say, that's not too bad, those Hare Krishnas, they really emphasize the bad points, you know? Come on, it's not that bad. Just wait until we get a cancer or something, you know? And I'll see how it's not that bad, you know? So, it's terribly bad. It's actually terribly bad. You know, just this morning I came across a devotee, you know, very nice devotee, very wonderful devotee. And I could perceive in her body terrible changes. And I know what the changes are due to. Terrible changes, terrible changes. Person used to be different. Now terrible changes. So, Prabhupada said, as long as you're hopeful, your spiritual life is hopeless. <You know? laughs> We have to come to that conclusion. And if we don't come through that conclusion through the ear, Krishna might do something else. He'll bang on our head. to make us understand very clearly. And Prabhupada said, when we suffer, it becomes an impetus. Of course, we know in Bhagavad Gita that if we don't have sufficient piety, when we suffer, we curse God. But if we have enough piety and if we have a little good association and a little knowledge, then when we suffer, immediately what we do? We take shelter of God. It becomes an impetus for our spiritual life. Therefore, miseries are not bad. They feel bad. That they feel bad. They feel very bad. But they are not bad. From the ultimate point of view, they are simply an impetus to engage ourselves in the culture of vidya or transcendental knowledge. So this is what Srila Prabhupada explains here. So we've got 2 points so far. This one that we just had, that we learn from the miseries of life. This is indirect learning. And the other indirect learning was that we actually learn from the guru, from the shastras, what is material life, what are the defects of this sense gratification. We learn theoretically and we learn from that, and then we learn to stay away from the traps of this material world. And what is the third thing that Prabhupada explains? Sorry? Yes, the same, the miseries of life. Poverty and reflections. Okay, we shall help you. Anyone else? Prabhupada explains that this body is a lump of ignorance. This body is a lump of ignorance. What a wonderful definition, right? It's not the first thing you say to someone you want to preach to. This body is a lump of ignorance. Cultivating avidya means to maintain this material body. We have to maintain it. This is cultivation of ignorance, because this body itself is ignorance. It is made of matter and it's the product of our ignorance. And how do we have to maintain the material body? Prabhupada explains, by regulated sense gratification. And why should we maintain this ignorance? Why not get rid of it immediately? For the purpose of using it for spiritual advancement. This body is a lamp of ignorance, but it also the means by which we can cultivate knowledge. So to indirectly cultivate knowledge means to maintain this body. All the work that we do to maintain this material body, it is called avidya. Prabhupada explains, the culture of spiritual knowledge necessitates the help of the body and mind. Therefore, maintenance of the body and mind is required if we are to reach our goal. To make the best use of a bad bargain is the appropriate expression. Prabhupada said, we must develop the culture of spiritual knowledge so that we may become completely free from the cruel hands of death. This does not mean that all activities for the maintenance of the body should be stopped. So this is how Srila Prabhupada explains this cultivation of avidya. And he gives an example, an analogy, the analogy of the fever. Did you understand the analogy of the fever? Yes?
We have to maintain the healthy temperature of the body, not increase it, and not increase
the temperature. Yes. So what is high fever?
105, 107.
Sense gratification. Yes. Excess. That is high fever is excess sense gratification. Excess passion, excess sense gratification, excess material endeavor. That is high fever. So if one is not a good doctor, what he will do? He will say, this high fever is cause, this fever, he will say, is cause of my disease. So what to do? Sit in the fridge for a while. Right? Stop it! Just stop it! And all of a sudden, you try to decrease the temperature, but you decrease, you stop sense gratification all of a sudden. From 106, you go to?
98.
Not 98, you go below. You go to 50, you know? So, and then the body becomes brrr, and then you start shaking in cold, grrr, you know? And what? Is this a better, healthy condition? No, it's not. It won't be natural. You won't be able to think of Krishna. So therefore, the Shastras say that sense gratification, you should learn that slowly, slowly you reduce. Like there are some drugs like this, you just take the pill and your fever goes down by several degrees in 1 second and you go like, ooh. So this is not the way. Any good doctor knows that the fever should be reduced gradually. And then you will come to a good health. There is a story in this regard, because at this time you can only learn through stories. The story of the lady who had a maid servant. You know the story of the lady who had a maid servant? Oh. She had the lady had a big high fever. She was very sick with something like typhoid, one of the beauties of the tropical climates. So she was very highly, highly sick. And the doctor came, he said, oh, 102. This very high fever, no good. But then he informed her, he said, but you're doing quite fine, he said, because your maidservant, she also's got it. She's really sick and she's got 104. So lady went like, come on, how is this possible? My maid servant has more fever than me? I am the Swamini of the house. I should be excelling in everything. How come she has more fever than me? That's not correct. So these are the discussions of the ignorant materialists, always searching for more sense gratification. But if we want spiritual life, we must learn to regulate sense gratification. And Srila Prabhupada says that this sense gratification is a disease. And it's only when we remove that excess sense gratification without going into the other extreme of starving the body or creating a mental, emotional imbalance out of starvation from sense gratification, when we actually can retain a balance, then we will regain our healthy, balanced state and we will actually be able to enjoy sense pleasure again. Real sense pleasure, which means to simply accept Krishna Prasad and be serving Krishna. So Prabhupada says that what is the sign of high temperature in the material world? It's funny. He says the 107 degrees in the form of atomic energy. It's ready to blow up. Near death experience. So, to conclude this section here, Prabhupada explains that We must take advantage of the material body and mind to go back to Godhead by a balanced program of spiritual and material knowledge. Okay. So the balance program, so in the Vedas, there are two paths which are recommended for this kind of balance program. And one is the traditional progressive Vedic path of Varnashram, by which the sense gratification, the fever of sense gratification is reduced over many lifetimes. It's called, in fact, the path of regulated sense enjoyment. But for us, this is not very practical, because the thing is that if we want to take birth again, you know, we can see, even in our own lifetime, how things were doing 20 years ago. Of course, some of you cannot see, but those who are at least 40 years old, they can see how things were going 20 years ago, or even 10 years ago, and how they are going today. How fast the degradation of the society is happening. So who wants to try the progressive path and do slowly this life and come back next life for more? Who wants to try that? Prabhupada did not advise. He said, don't come back. This was his advice. Finish it up in this lifetime. Of course, it's not in our hands. But Prabhupada advised that in Kali Yuga, in the pursuance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions, we stick to the direct path of devotional service. We put all our emphasis on the direct path of devotional service. So this is his advice. And in devotional service, we will have balanced sense gratification integrated, because we practice Yukta Vairagya, which means that we use everything in Krishna's service. And if we are not able to fully engage 100% in devotional service, then we should take help of the Varnashram system and engage in regulated sense gratification according to the ashrams. So in that way, we should balance our life. Okay, so for tomorrow, I'll ask some questions. First question, does anybody have an experience of learning a lesson through suffering? No, you don't have. Anyone has this kind of experience?
Learning through suffering.
So tomorrow we will hear a little glimpse of what it means of learning through suffering. So look for some short lesson of learning through suffering. Another question for tomorrow. What is the danger of only knowing the bliss of spiritual life and not the misery of material existence? What is the danger of only knowing the bliss of spiritual life and not the misery of material existence? And you could think of the opposite as well. That what is the danger of knowing the misery of material existence but not the bliss of spiritual life? So you think about these things.
Is the learning through suffering in our own lives?
Yeah.
An experience in our
own lives? Yeah, or you can, if you have somebody else's experience, you can also say that. And you can also meditate. I can give you some subjects of meditation which are connected to these verses. Um, how do we restrict sense gratification, and what is the result of untimely renunciation? Renunciation of sense gratification, of sense object, or renunciation in general. What is the result of untimely renunciation? That we should, the result is actually not positive. And what is that? Because we are trying to reduce the fever too quick. How much should we tolerate the pushing of the senses and mind? Because then we can go on the other side. Well, Prabhupada, and the renunciation is not good, you know. How much should we tolerate the pushing of the senses and mind? Because the Shastra does advise you should be self-controlled, we should tolerate the pushes, but how far should we tolerate? So these are the questions. These are questions that everybody must know and answer personally for themselves, because we must live a balance between material and spiritual life, or rather between sense gratification and our endeavors for direct engagement in spiritual life. Okay, so we'll stop here.